When you listen to my interview with Mary Mirioni, you'll quickly figure out that this was not a typical interview for me. I've known Mary for around half my life now, as one of my sisters in the Catechesis, the Good Shepherd movement, a Montessori-based faith formation experience for children starting in infancy through 12 years old. For many years, Mary coordinated CGS at St. Anne's Parish in a suburb of Phoenix, serving over 5,000 families. Her commitment to sharing CGS with children in poverty has led to extensive collaboration with the Missionaries of Charity and the Franciscan Friars in such diverse places as Kolkata, India, Portugal, Bangladesh, and Honduras. For almost 15 years now, she served as the national director of the U.S. Association of CGS, a position that's made her a well-known voice in the U.S. CCB committee work related to catechetics. Mary was raised in Brooklyn and met her future husband in a karate class. She's tough and direct and protective of those in her care, much like a shepherd might be with sheep. She's also one of the holiest, most loving people I know, much like the Good Shepherd himself. When I talked with Mary, she had just been reading a book on holy daring, focusing on the word parisia, meaning frank, direct speech. Her comments on this topic helped shape chapter 2 in Redeeming Power in a most particular way, as you'll be able to figure out.
When I say the word power, what do you think is being meant by it? Like, how would you define what it is? What is power? Because that's part of my question. I think we're using that word in a lot of different ways.
I think that in the world, maybe one of the ways, because I thought this was interesting, you were saying power or influence, and I immediately thought of the influencers. Like, I don't get that whole thing in our culture today, to be an influencer. Like, what does that even mean? You know, like, you have so many likes on Facebook, like, or Twitter or whatever it is. Like, what are you influencing? How we dress? I mean, like, I don't get that. Like, I think that the world sees that as power, as a power, but I don't see the point of it. For me, and I think for us, we are so grounded in the mustard seed, right? What strength, what power can be inside that tiny seed, and who does it belong to? The power, certainly, is the risen life of God. That's the true power. Right? Because that, I mean, that's the be not afraid, right? Afraid of what? Well, death is the thing we're talking about, whether we know it or not, whether we believe it or not, that's really what we're talking about. And that's not a fear anymore. And that amazing power of life, the mystery of life and death, that's real power. And so how do we live that? We live that out with the littlest ones who recognize it and delight in it. And we're back to the joy. So to live, and, you know, I did look at a few scriptures. So that's Colossians 1:9-14. Therefore, from the day we heard this, we do not cease praying for you and asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will through all spiritual wisdom and understanding, to live in a manner worthy of the Lord, so as to be fully pleasing in every good work, bearing fruit, growing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with every power, in accord with his glorious might, for all endurance and patience, with joy, giving thanks to the Father, who has made you fit to share in the inheritance of the holy ones in light. He delivers us from the power of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption and forgiveness of sin. Like, that's power, right? Isn't that, that's power.
So, you know, for you is a way of saying a strength that's, a strength for life that's stronger than death? Is that?
Yeah, that's of God. That, you know, if your strength is stronger than death, then what does that mean? That means whenever I'm afraid, like whenever I have to speak with holy daring, right? And with holy daring, usually you're not speaking, you're speaking to maybe people who are maybe like above you in a perceived power level, right? Like that's why it's daring, because it could be dangerous, right? And that's often in my position, even as a leader, I'm usually in a space where I have to assume that many in the room think we're nuts or, you know, or just don't matter in any way. They don't recognize or understand the religious potential of children, that their religious lives, how rich it is. Right. So I have to speak about it. And, you know, how do you not get tongue tied? How do you open your mouth and proclaim what you know to be true? Right. To people who really don't care or don't believe you or like whatever. It's just to me, it's very, very similar to, well, to both Amos and to, you know, Paul and what Jesus said. Like, what did he say? Don't worry about what you're going to say. I'll tell you, like in the moment, you'll be able to do it. Like, don't worry about it. Right. Amos, I'm just a dresser of sycamore. I did what he told me, and now I'm going back to my trees. Right. And I get to go back to the children. And there's power. To me, there's power in that. I don't know if that's the power you're thinking about, you know, for the book. But to me, that's powerful. That gives me the strength I need to go and do my work, which is to uphold our mission and purpose, which is to be an advocate for those that can't speak or don't speak or won't speak, don't need to speak about their lives. But they do need a space. They need time and space to live that out, and that they can't speak for. So, you know, we do. And there's power in that. We have power in that. It doesn't come from me.
Right? Where does it, for you, almost hear now that power for you is synonymous with spirit, as I hear you talking.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Because it's within me, but not of me. That's what I would say.
So what you've been describing is, and your role as director has definitely led you into a lot of these spaces where you're going into places where it's almost like the room vibrates with power. Like when you're going to speak with bishops or you're going to a conference and stuff like that. And you're entering into that situation. And a lot of times you're feeling to be the less powerful one in the room. And what I hear you saying is that you just very explicitly call on the spirit to be with you in your words. Is there anything else?
I basically say, okay, I'm going to open my mouth now. If you want this to be good, you better show up. And, you know, I mean, and I've seen it. I think I've seen it. And Paul, when he had the thorn and he kept praying for the thorn to be taken away, and God tells him, you know, my power is made strong in weakness. How do we let ourselves be weak enough to avail ourselves of that power, which is, I believe, the greatest power in the world, right? And what is his power, if we really think about it, Anne? Not power, it's love. And we're built for love. We are physically built for love. That's what I'm seeing with the infant toddlers. I've told you about myelization, right?
Your what?
Myelization. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about that I've learned about the littlest ones, myelization is something that happens. I can't tell you the science too well, but it's when the neurons start connecting in the brain, and it has to happen, right? It kind of, whatever this film or whatever, like forms on the connection to make it strong. And that's happening in the infants constantly for so many different reasons, right? And we are made in such a way that our cheeks, when our cheeks are stimulated, this process happens more. And probably that's because from nursing, it makes sense. But just think about a grandma's kisses. I mean, just think, how are those cheeks stimulated? They are stimulated through love. And what does that infant want to look upon? Their beloved's face. That's the most important thing. I mean, all of it, like it's so organically true that he made us for love. And Montessori said that too. It's the greatest power in the universe.
You're reminding me of that line. Do you remember that we read from Teilhard de Chardin about, it's one of his most famous lines, like in the end, like after we've harnessed wind, after we've learned how to harness fire, after we've like, we'll learn how to harness the power of love. And then for the second time in history, the world would have known power or would have known fire. Like that's, like, how does one harness the energy of love?
Right, right. Montessori says a similar thing in the last chapter of Absorbent Mind. And she talks about how at Montessori gatherings, despite political differences, they could gather around the child. And she talks about that being the child's power, that whatever our political or religious affiliations, we are all near to the child. We all love him. And it is from this love that the child's power, that comes the child's power for unity.
I mean, what you're describing, this is my experience of you, is that I don't think you necessarily define yourself as a person who has power. Like, that's not the way that you identify or think about yourself. Mm-hmm. But you do have tremendous power because you have tremendous love. And that love actually makes things happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. But one of the things that strikes me from knowing you and working with you for so long is that for you, I guess it's kind of like a Magnificat power, if you say a Marian power, in that you recognize that the one who's really like behind all of it, that it's not you, that it's God. And part of it is because you are simultaneously, as a person who holds such power, you are simultaneously very aware of your weakness, like your smallness. And that seems to be what enables your power to act so in such a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of something just came to mind. I don't think it has anything to do with this book, but, you know, as far as the physical power, when we were in Calcutta, it was me and Linda and then two sisters. And there was a guy who was following us. And I was getting, the Brooklyn in me was getting really annoyed that he was trying to, whatever he was trying to do, take our bags, and in my mind, he was going after Linda. Little tiny Linda, do not mess with Linda. So I started, you know, my Brooklyn looking at him like, you know, it's the physical version of, are you talking to me? You can say that with your body. I mean, so, you know, I mean, I don't know if I felt powerful in that moment, but there was no way he was going to hurt her. And then the sisters say, no, he knows that we may have money in our bags. He's looking to take our bags. Then I was even more, you know, angry. You mean you are going to go steal from the missionaries of charity? Are you kidding me? So I was really, he didn't bother us because I made it very clear because I was bigger than him. And I did, I think, make it clear to him if he tried, he would get hurt.
I think one of the things that's so fascinating about you is that you do have, there's something about your childhood and your Brooklyn that is also a source of great strength for you or makes you less intimidated in the world. What you consciously choose over and over again is to use the power of love. But it's kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like, you know, you've got a backup plan.
Yeah, I do.
I can deck you.
That's right.
I can exactly. Take you out.
We could take it outside. If you want.
And I wonder if you think of that as a source of strength in your life. Also, your Brooklyn background.
Well, I think it really goes back to that holy daring, because I think that's part of that. And it's a Greek word and it's a great word. And there's a lot in there. There's like a whole lot in there. And I might not even really have a good understanding of it. But to me, part of the Brooklynness is we speak plainly. We don't have, like, we never have enough time. So say what you're going to say and just like, don't mince around with it. Like, don't go on and on about it. Just say what it is. And then, you know, in the position that I'm in, I am often sizing up the situation. Is it that they're just, they don't know, or they don't care to know, or they don't want to know? And then that's how I will move forward and still speak as much truth as possible in the limited time and space I have to speak it.
I think what you witness in terms of the way that you live your power is there's a lot of holiness to it, which is one of the reasons why I want to interview you. Because what you've done is you've integrated these two sides of yourself, like a strength and a perseverance that comes from your Brooklyn side, a tremendous love that has come from your Good Shepherd. And you've brought them together in your life, I think, through a life of prayer, I'm sure. But I wonder if you could just say something about what that process of integration has been like for you. How did you arrive at this sense of like one of your practices, speaking to the Holy Spirit before you speak? You have a very honest Jewish lament conversation with God. the practice that you have of, you know, of Magnificat, of just like turning everything over all the time, like all the praises toward God. Like, how did you arrive at some of that? When did those pieces begin to come together?
Well, you know, in some ways, Anne, I'd really say, honestly, I don't think I consider myself having arrived at it. You know, I mean, I think it's something that I'm always learning, always seeking. Like, you know, when you asked the question about the toolbox, you know, like that's something I would really want more in my toolbox, to see that, because often, I mean, you know, I worry a lot about a lot, you know what I mean? And if I truly lived what I'm proclaiming here, would I worry at all? You know, and I would say, honestly, that what has integrated it for me more than anything is my 30 years being in an atrium with children. I mean, at St. Anne's, right, we went from 400 families to over 5,000 families in 3 years. It was crazy. We moved off campus, right? When we moved off campus, we didn't really get any support or help from the parish necessarily, from the, you know, like custodians and like all of that kind of stuff we had to do. Of course, the parish, the parents of the children, they chose that. We all chose that together. So they were there. But I was in the atrium every day. We had atrium sessions every day but Sunday. We had them in two languages. We had them throughout the day. And often I'd be in a room with children saying, did we talk about this before? Because I couldn't remember. Was it with you or was it with, you know what I'm saying? So I think there's so much I've learned from them, so much I've learned from them, that that's really where the integration has happened. We get into power struggles, and never get into a power struggle with a three-year-old, because you're going to lose. Why are you going to lose? Because of the development of the will, right? They are claiming their dominion. We need to help them do that, right? Go and have dominion, he says to us. Well, we call it the terrible twos. And really all it is they're starting to claim themselves. They're starting to claim who God created them to be as a person. And we fight them for it. They are learning the power of the word no. That's a good thing. And we say terrible things about them.
Yeah, I mean, Mary, as you're talking, I'm becoming more conscientious or aware of just how much catechesis of the Good Shepherd does, and Montessori pedagogy offers us a spirituality for managing power well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't useless that awesome? Servant.
Because I think Montessori herself was somebody kind of like you, who had a really strong will and a lot of perseverance. Obviously, she couldn't have done what she'd done without that. And also, through observation of the child, learned really like, how do I watch what the other person needs? Do I intervene in this moment? Do I not? Is there danger? And then it strikes me that the two biggest forces in your own development of this has been Montessori, and then I think also your work with the Missionaries of Charity, mm-hmm. which is where the joy piece comes in, like that there's a power in poverty. There's a power in joy. But it almost reminds me of what Sophia talks about with the awe and wonder. Like it's not a power that pushes, but a power that attracts and pulls.
Yeah.
Mary, we actually had a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure that I was going to help you, Anne. I hope I did.
Oh, no, I think this was beautiful and brilliant. I'm so grateful for it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you're interested in learning more about Maria Montessori and the origins of the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd movement, check out the end of Chapter 1 in Redeeming Power, where I give a little bit more about Montessori's life story. Know that I'm praying for you this week as you embrace the challenge of being the leader that God has called you to be in the world.